Hey, my name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
My sobriety date's November 27th, 2013. My sponsor's name is Matt, and my home group is the Wednesday Night Big Book Study in Newtown, Pennsylvania. Just like in the Big Book, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and both of my parents are, they're from Chicago. Real down-to-earth, like, Midwestern, hard-working people. They're good people. They don't really drink. They don't do any drugs. You know, I have a little sister. You know, growing up, my life was, like, pretty normal, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I had every opportunity to succeed. You know, I lived in a good home. You know, I had the things that I needed. As far as alcoholism goes, looking back on it, I remember hearing about alcoholism when I was young, hearing about it from both sides of my parents' families. You know, on my mother's side, it was all about, like these crazy uncles that she had that they were drunk all the time. You know what I mean? They would come home from work, and they would hand over their paycheck to their wife, and they would get blasted, and they died young, and they didn't live in, like, happy households. And on my dad's side, it was a little different. It was his father, and, you know, I grew up hearing, like, a lot of horror stories about it, you know. My dad had a tough life. You know, his dad, he was always drunk. You know, the home was always in chaos. There was always the fighting. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what you're getting into when you walk through the door. You know, his little sister was, like, severely mentally retarded, and his dad couldn't handle it. You know, so there's even extra tension in the house. You know, the stories were kind of like, you know, he would talk about playing baseball as a kid, but hating it, you know, because his dad was the coach, and he would, like, show up to the practices, like, buzzed. You know, people would tease him, you know, like, hey, Mark, well, your old man's drunk again, you know, like, he still has this shame to, like, this day, you know, or, like his mother would, like, send him down to the bar to get his dad at dinner time, because they'd call, but, like, he'd say he wasn't there, you know, he was there drinking, you know, and, you know, this affects my dad to this day in many ways still, and, you know, what I remember the most about that is thinking, like, I don't want to be like that, you know. When I was in high school, you know, my friends started drinking. And, like, I remember even telling him, like, I don't want to end up like my grandfather. I'm not going to do that, you know. So, you know, my first job in high school, I was working at a restaurant. I was working at, like, a little burger joint. And I worked with some really cool people, you know. And I remember having a lot of conversations about what they did recreationally. And, you know, I found alcohol's green leafy cousin first, you know, because that sounded like it wasn't something that had destroyed my dad's family, you know. So I went ahead and tried that first, and I loved it. I started doing that all the time. My friends in high school started drinking, and that was kind of convenient, you know, because, like, I would drive, you know, so that's kind of how it went for a little bit. And, like, to be honest, like, I don't really remember why I took my first drink. It might have been, like, curiosity, or, like, I was bored, or, like, looked like they were having a good time. So I decided to drink. You know, it was kind of one of those things where, like, everybody says, we're going to stay somewhere else tonight, you know. Like I said, I grew up in Florida, so my first drunk was, like, kind of by the Intercoastal Waterway in Fort Lauderdale. Picture, like, big, pretty canal, you know, like, picnic tables. And, you know, somebody gave me a can of beer, and, like, I didn't like that. And then somebody else gave me, like, a really strong rum and Coke, and, like, I didn't like that either. But, you know, I liked the way it made me feel. And shortly afterward, this get-together was interrupted by the local police, and we left. And we ended up getting, like, a cheap motel room on Hollywood Beach. So that's where my first real drunk took place. And what I remember about it the most to this day was just, like, sitting on the red cooler at the edge of the bed in, like, this really crummy motel room. And we had Southern Comfort and rum, and I was chasing it with Coca-Cola. And when I started drinking, all these, like, fears that I had growing up, like, I didn't realize these things until I get sober in AA and I hear people talk about how they felt, you know, and how they reacted to life, you know, and how they thought, you know, even before they drank. And I was always afraid, you know, somebody's always better, somebody's always smarter, you know, somebody's always got something that, you know, I want and I think it'll make me happy, you know. And the fear, like, I didn't even realize how much fear ran my life until well after I was sober, you know. It was like, you know, in school, like, it's the first day of school, but, like, I'm afraid about, like, where am I going to sit tomorrow? Or, like, where am I going to sit at lunch? Or, like, what if this happens? Or what if that happens? And, like, it never went away, you know. But when I started taking those drinks, it went away, you know, and I felt like I could come out and play, you know, I could laugh and I could carry on, and people were laughing, and many, many years later, I realized they were laughing at me, but that's besides the point. When I started drinking, I couldn't control it, and I just kept drinking, and I loved it, and I kept drinking, and I blacked out. I came to in the fetal position in the scummiest shower I've ever seen, crying for my mother, and I felt like I was dying. And much of that day, it was really blurry. It was like little snapshots of like consciousness. It was like, you know, first like I came to, and then I was in a Burger King, and I remember putting my head down on the table, and it was lights out. And then I remember throwing up in a parking lot or an alley somewhere. And then I came to in the front seat of my own car, and I was sitting in the front passenger seat wearing somebody else's clothes. I had a Burger King crown on. I was seatbelted in, and the window was cracked. Like, and I was like, what? Like, my buddies drove me home, and I remember like spending the whole weekend in bed. You know, I felt sick for days, and you know, people talk about like that that like I have arrived, and I guess for me, like I felt that when I went to school Monday morning because everybody was talking about the weekend, and like, I suppose somebody who could drink safely might have said, I'm never doing that again. But I said, well, when are we doing that again? And that's how my drinking started. So, I mean, in high school, it was really like a weekend warrior kind of thing. You know, I drank the hard liquor. I didn't like the beer. You know, we always knew somebody who could buy us something. And that's how it went. I didn't really have any consequences. You know, it seemed like fun at the time. You know, as time went on, like towards the end of my high school career, like my dad ended up losing his job down there and getting a much better job up here in Pennsylvania. So they worked something out where like he could commute for the last couple months so I could finish my senior year and then we could move up here. You know, so my dad was like working and traveling and my mom was in charge of like selling the house. And, you know, I remember like not thinking like, well, how nice are my parents that they're doing this for me? It was more like, why are you doing this to me? You know, like I finally felt like I belong a little bit and like these are my friends. And, you know, when we moved up here, like I was miserable. You know, I was away from my friends and I wasn't drinking. You know, like I realize now it was like a self-pity party. Like for a couple months, I really didn't do anything. I like washed the car. I played pool by myself. I ran all the movie at Blockbusters. This sucks. When can I get out of here? And I ended up going back to school in Florida. I wanted to be back by my friends. And I found a way to do that. So I found myself in like Boca Raton, Florida. I got the old job back. My friends are 20 miles away. And like now I'm away from my family and I meet people that drink just like I do. So now I get drunk every night. One of my sweet mates was this dude from Austria. He had like this crazy driver's license. It was pink and it looked like a fold up Chinese menu with a picture stuck to it in the middle. And the coolest thing about that was he didn't have a car and I did. So it was really easy for me to get whatever I wanted. And I got drunk every night. And I started to notice some things that seemed abnormal. Like a friend of mine from high school was staying at the same college on the other side of campus, and we could get away with a little bit more over there. So, you know, his freezer was full of booze and like no food. And I would go over there all the time and, you know, like put the cardboard in the windows and turn on the black lights in the 90s. And I got drunk. I remember having lots and lots of blackouts. You know, I would come to and, you know, I'm in my dorm room and I'm covered in scrapes and cuts and there's dried blood everywhere and I have no idea how I got there and like, where's the car? And I'd start and go into the ATM and withdrawing money and I'd see that my bank account was withdrawn, but I didn't recall taking out any money, you know, and I don't know, I just kind of brushed it off. I was like, I guess that's just what happens. But a story that really stands out, like I remember one time one of my friends came up from Fort Lauderdale and we were drinking all weekend. And, you know, he had mentioned that we can go to this party down in Miami with a bunch of people we went to high school with. So, you know, we start off with some day drinking, sipping some hard liquor, drinking some beer, doing what we do. And, you know, we get in the car and I'm driving. So, you know, we're driving south down I-95. We stop off at Fort Lauderdale, pick up my other buddy. And then, you know, we end up in Miami. You know, so we're at this guy Sean's house, real nice house. And you see a bunch of people we know. We're doing our thing, smoking and drinking. And, you know, we drank everything we brought, and I remember this guy saying to me, he's like, you know, my parents have, like, this big liquor stash, and they don't really drink, so you can, like, have anything you want, like, help yourself. So I found a big bottle of brown liquor and proceeded to help myself, and I got really drunk, and I remember, like, having the conversation with my buddy, like, are we going to stay here, are we going to go, and, like, we kind of wanted to go, we had our own beds, so we left, you know. I remember it was a really stormy night. You know, I found out later that it was like a tropical storm, which is pretty bad. And, you know, we jump on I-95. We're driving north. It's probably like maybe 40, 50 miles. And I remember passing the skyline of Fort Lauderdale, and then I don't remember anything. I came to in this dorm room like really, really scared. I remember waking up my buddy saying, like, what happened? Like, where's the car? I was like really freaked out. And I remember like running outside in the rain to look for the car, and like it wasn't there. It was like a couple parking lots over, and like it was backed in. I don't back in, and it was locked, and I was really freaked out. You know, I remember him specifically like, "Shut up, dude, go back to sleep." You know, and I don't remember like exact details, but I remember looking through a phone book, and I don't know who I called, but I was scared, and I don't remember who I talked to. But I remember that I ended up at some kind of AA meetings in Boca Raton in the 90s. And like, looking back on it, I didn't know anything. Like, I thought it was like some kind of book club or like social gathering. Like, I didn't understand what alcoholism was. And, you know, what I did was is I went to the meetings and, you know, they gave out like poker chips, you know, for sobriety times. And I drank the coffee. And, like, I kind of listened, but, like, that was it. I didn't realize that there was any more to it, and I didn't realize how serious this was. And the thing I remember the most is that during this time, I didn't drink, but, like, I was miserable. I was lonely. I was in my head, and, like, I did less schoolwork, and, like, I kind of secluded, and, like, it was kind of bad. I remember, like, repeating the stuff that people said in AA, like a parrot. You know, like, I didn't drink today, so that's going to be good enough. Or, like, you know, just don't drink and go to meetings, or... I'm so happy that I'm sober. I'm grateful that I'm sober. And I remember my college roommate saying, like, he was glad that I wasn't drinking. You know, he was like, "This is great, man." He's like, "You're great when you're not drinking. You're talking about history and philosophy. You're not talking about getting drunk and, like, making smoking devices out of whatever you can find." And, you know, I remember, like, we got invited. We were working together at this restaurant, waiting tables and cooking. And, like, they had, like a big party. And remember we were invited, and we go, "I don't know, I'm not drinking. Well, I'll go, you know, I'll be the driver, the designated driver." And, like, you know, people that I work with, like, knew I was going to AA. And, like, so I go to this party with no intention of drinking. I'm sitting around the pool, and, like, there's coolers of beer everywhere. And I remember just, like, looking around, you know, like, I feel like I'm missing out, you know, like, poor me, you know, it looks like so good, you know, and talking to people about it, you know, like, what do you think, you know? And then it turns into, you know, what I know now is it's like just like the book said, man, this is a mental illness as well as physical and spiritual. And I had no effective mental defense against the first drink, and I didn't know it. So when I look at that can of Coors Light, the thought was, well, just one won't hurt me. And that can of beer ended up lasting like 16 years. It was a nightmare. You know, like, I got real drunk that night. I narrowly missed getting arrested because we were doing other illegal activities a couple minutes before law enforcement arrived. I drove real drunk. I blacked out again. I do remember the look of disappointment on my roommate's face as I saw him cleaning the couch cushions the next day. And that's how my drinking started again. From there, it was back to the usual. Drunk all the time. In short order, I basically got expelled from the school. And I remember, like, what a shocker it was. I remember talking to somebody in the office about it, like, "Well, can I stay? You know, I'm trying to, like, hide this from my parents." And he's like, "This isn't a hotel." He's like, "You must have screwed up really phenomenally to get kicked out. So, like, I don't know what you did, but you probably want to think about that." And, like, I remember, like, my dad flying down to help me drive my car back with my worldly belongings. And it was just this terrible feeling of just being, like, lost and displaced again. And that was, like, the longest car ride I think I ever had. It was terrible. And when I got up here, you know, Bucks County again, I didn't really have any idea what I was going to do with my life. You know, I tried going to Bucks Community College, and I took some classes, and I tried taking time off and working in the restaurants, and I kind of bounced back and forth between those. And one thing that happened is I met people in the restaurant that worked the same hours I do, and they drink like I drink. So I was back at it again. You know, I had like a cool fake ID from Florida that somebody taught me how to make. And since it was out of state, people took it pretty much everywhere so I could get what I wanted and drink where I wanted. And I was off again. You know, the next many years are kind of like the same old thing. It's like, I think we're going to have just a couple, and that's what we say. And then I go out and I drink till they turn the lights on. And I wake up early, go to work the next day, and I'm in pain. And I say, I'm never going to do that again. And then by like 5, I'm thinking, well, I'll just have beer. And then, you know, by 10, it's like, well, let's just have a couple. And like, it just goes on and on. Like, I don't really have any direction. So I'm kind of going to school part time. I'm bouncing around between restaurants. I cook. I wait tables. I start racking up DUIs slowly. You know, I get one. I beat it in court. I'll never do that again. You know, I get another one. I get whacked for, like, I lose my license for 30 days. Well, I learn my lesson, you know. And then, like, I get another one, and it's like, well, I might really go to jail this time. So, like, I was really scared. You know, but I ended up just doing it again. Like, I remember, like, I served out, like, a 90-day house arrest. And the first night on parole, I get drunk. And then I got, like, the breathalyzer on the car. And I remember when I got that off, like, I celebrated that by drinking and driving. I remember, like, well, it's daylight. And, like, I'll just have a couple. It'll be fine, you know. And here I am again. And, like, it's so crazy looking back on it. Basically, my life was going nowhere. I did the same things, you know, like every Sunday night when I cooked, I'd immediately turn right and pick up some kind of like malt liquor or something. I'd get drunk. I watch the History Channel. I do it all over again. Like it was just like a time warp, you know, the hangovers and like people I know are like growing up and getting married and having kids and buying houses and like, and I'm doing the same thing. Eventually, like, my parents are starting to get sick of this. You know, they keep finding, like, illegal-looking glassware in the house. And, like, I'm coming home late, and I'm irresponsible. And, you know, finally, like, I have one of those, like, you know, we have to talk moments again. And, like, for the first time, like, I didn't lie. You know, I didn't say I'm going to stop, or I didn't say I'm not going to do that in the house. I'm like, this is, like, I don't know. You know, like, maybe, like, I'll just move out. You know, and I didn't have any kind of plan. I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I remember, it felt terrible. This happened at a wedding. You know, I was supposed to go to this wedding with some girl. And, like, she didn't show up, and, like, my dad wasn't supposed to be home. And I'm, like, sitting in my room by myself drinking, like, a warm six-pack of Busch. And, like, my dad comes in while I'm doing something else. And, like, it's the same look my roommate gave me. And I'm, like, well, might as well get good and loaded tonight because I'm probably going to be homeless tomorrow. I remember, like, that was the mood that I went to one of my friend's weddings with. And what ended up happening is I talked to my buddy, the guy that was in the car that night when I drove drunk. And he lives in Colorado now with his family. And like, he knows what's going on with me, and he's like, you know, man, he's like, you got nothing going on there. He's like, why don't you try something different? You know, like, we I got this like, condo with my girlfriend, and, like, her friend just kind of bailed on us, so I got an empty room. He's like, I can get you a job at the restaurant, man. He's like, you don't even need to bring your car. He's like, just come check it out for a couple months. If you don't like it, go back. And I say, all right, you know, so I moved to Colorado. I got, like, a one-way plane ticket. I got, like, $150 and a guitar, and I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm going to start over. You know, from reading the stories in the big book, I now know that this is the geographical cure, which does not work. I moved to this, like, little town in southwest Colorado in the mountains. And it's, like, so pretty. You know, people are nice, and, like, people drink like I drink, and they're, like, kind of outdoorsy, like a Subaru commercial, right? They're, like, kayaking and camping, and we're going to go snowboarding. And I'm like, this is great, you know? Like, I didn't do any of that, like. I got drunk, and I went camping, and I fell down and got hurt. That was pretty much what I did in Colorado. And, you know, like, the first restaurant I work at, it was a cool spot, kind of like a mom-and-pop shop. The chefs were crazy. You know, they see me with, like, a vicious hangover, and, like, they're smiling, and the guy passes me his, like, big travel coffee mug, which I then learned was full of whiskey, you know, because then I was able to run the food, you know. You know, I work with this crazy, like, heavy-set, like, Native American lady, and she was real cool, man. She drank like I did. She gave me a ride home. And, like, when the dinner shift would slow down, like, we poured our own drinks for the tables when it was slow. So we would just go behind the bar, and we'd pour our own drinks for ourselves. And, like, that was our thing. You know, so now I'm, like, drinking on the job. You know, we stop at the same liquor store every night. And, like, they know who we are. And, like, I feel like a celebrity, you know. I go in there. Hey, I was working slow tonight. How you doing? Good. You know, I'm like, this is great, you know. I drink before work. You know, I try to, like, control and enjoy my drinking before work. Like, I have a couple beers with my roommate, and, like, he goes to take a shower, and I'm, like, rifling through the kitchen for his vodka bottle, and I'm standing there, like, trying to tag it before he comes out, and then I'm, like, brushing my teeth and, like, you know, holding my breath, and, like, it never, like, occurred to me that wasn't normal. After a little while, this restaurant gets sold to some people. Let's just say it was, like, real shady, because, like, this restaurant's not making no money, and everybody's driving a Mercedes, and they got these big houses and more guns than the National Guard. You know, like, the new chef says to my other roommate who's cooking there now, he's like, this is in case you steal, and he shows him a taser, you know, and a pair of handcuffs, and I'm like, this is a wrap, man, I'm from Philly. So I quit, and, you know, I'm looking for work in this small town. Like, it's tough, man. It's like who you know. It's not like what your degree is or what you can do. It's who you know, and, like, the only job that I can find at this point is, like line cooking at a brewery, you know, like I had cooked at other jobs when I was younger, and, like, every time I'm cooking again, I say I'm never doing this again, you know, so I like this part-time gig at like this little tourist trap t-shirt shop, and like I worked there like 1 or 2 days a week, but it wasn't making rent. So I started line cooking at this brewery. It's like one of them kitchens where they got the glass around it, you know, like an exhibition kitchen. And I'm like, I think this is great. Like, you start the shift and they give you like a little 10-ounce glass of beer so the servers can like pair it with the dinner special, you know. And then if the shift's over, I get a shift drink and I can make my own meal and take it home if I want. So I'm like, this is sweet, you know. So it's the same old story, you know. Like at the previous restaurant, I worked with one guy, like another Native American guy, and like, I met him when I was working at the t-shirt shop when it was snowing real heavy. I put this sign in the window. It says back in 15 minutes because I had like a category 4 hangover. I felt like I was going to die. So I went downstairs to this little bar in the basement next door and I'm having a couple beers real quick. And this guy's drinking before his bartending shift at the other. I'm like, we're both like, and he likes science fiction. So we're best friends now. So that's how I met this guy. So I'm cooking with this guy at the brewery. And, you know, I've got, like, a hangover, so we meet up early, and we're doing, like, shots and beers before work, because, like, you know, who doesn't do that? And I remember, like, walking through the alley, smoking a cigarette with this guy, like, complaining about my headache, and, like, he had, like, this greatest plan ever. Like, he just happens to have, like, bottles of, like, Fireball cinnamon whiskey concealed all about his person, and just gives me one, and I'm like, this is great. Like, I like cinnamon, I like whiskey, I'm gonna get right real quick, and we're gonna go grill, you know, and, this started like a new phase of my drinking, and you know, he called them shooters, and this is something we do every day now. We'll text each other in the afternoon, like, who's picking up the rations for tonight, because we're closing, and yeah, I meet this guy in the walk-in cooler every day around 4 o'clock. We're stocking up the pizza dough, taking turns holding the cooler door shut. Let's get this party started, and eventually, I progress to the hot side. I'm working saute now, which is my favorite. I call it the vacation station. I only have to cook as fast as the people next to me, and I have white wine, red wine, and brandy to deglaze the pans, but, like, I really deglaze my drink. I get warned, I get in trouble, I don't do it for, like, a day, I, like, try to control it, you know, like, now I know from the big book I'm trying to control and enjoy my drinking, I'm chasing this illusion, you know, I'll wake up, I'll have a couple beers, I'll go to work, I keep drinking. I'll wait till right before I go in and I'll slam a bunch of shots of Fireball or like I get real drunk in the morning and then I'll take a nap and then go to work. But like really it doesn't work. It's just not working. I eventually get fired for drinking on the job and I remember like the shock of that. And I just kept doing what I do, you know, like I gotta try to find another job. Like, why does this keep happening to me? My life sucks, you know. But I remember it started to get bad, you know, like I started getting like real poor. Like I pay the rent. And I get drunk, and then I got a couple days where, like, I got like, literally no money. You know, I start, like, stealing change from my roommates. I stop buying cigarettes. Like, I pick up the butts out of the butt can. I remember, like, job hunting. I'd pick up butts out of the butt can, or I'd go to, like, the ledge of the liquor store because I know that they leave the half-smoked ones there. I'm paying for my booze and change. And, like, I don't get another job. I'm waiting tables again. And, like, I think this is a good job, so I'm just going to try to drink, you know, like, not that much before work. And I think I'm doing real good. I'm driving, like, this $500 truck, and, you know, I'm waiting tables, and I'm getting drunk every night. And, like, this guy, like, knows what's up. Like, he talks to me about it, you know. He's like, so what'd you have for lunch today? I was like, Taco Bell. He's like, bullshit. I could smell the booze on you. He's like, we don't drink before work here, you know. And then, I remember another time he had like a real like casual approach to it. He's like, Paul, like, you know, I know you drink before work, but like you got to come to work sober. You know, you make better money. You know, he's like, if you got a problem, that's cool. Like we can get you help or something. You know, but like, here's what's gonna happen. Eventually, like you're gonna become a liability, and like I'm gonna have to hook you, and like you're just gonna go somewhere else and make your money, and it's gonna happen again. And he was right. You know, I remember going in one day and he sat me down in the office. Fired me for drinking on the job. And, like, the second time, it didn't sting as much as the first. Like, I kind of knew what I was in for, you know. It's the same thing as grimy, you know. Like I'll buy, like, a loaf of bread, a pack of, like, small eggs and ramen noodles, and I'll get some plastic bottle vodka, and, like, I'm going to try to get me a job today. That was how it was. And after a couple of days of that, it's like I'm smoking the butts again. I'm stealing change from my roommates again. Like, I got to go to the liquor store. I got to go Max Liquors at 9 a.m. before I go to the public library to get on the computer to look for a job. And, like, I remember how much those bottles cost. It was $2.21 for a split and $3.74 for a pint. Like, I was paying change that I stole. It was like, really lonely, You know, I remember one weekend when this was going on, my roommates were all out of town, and like they had like cashed in their change jars. There was like nothing to steal. I remember like turning over the furniture, going through everything in the house over and over. Like I got nothing. And I remember like watching TV in bed, watching like Travel Channel. Like the, you know, it's dark and the TV's like flickering on the walls, and like I kept seeing spiders coming down the walls. And like there was no spiders, you know. Like I now know that that was like alcoholic hallucination, like shaking and sweating, and my mind's going crazy, and it was horrible. I remember like I put all these job applications. I'm getting real desperate, and finally get a call back, and like I finally get a job, you know, because like at this point I'm like the village idiot. This is like a small town. I'm the guy that gets fired for being drunk on the job. Like who's gonna hire me, you know? I get a job at a liquor store. It's one of those like real fancy like little like grocery stores with the liquor store next to it. And I'm like, all right, you know, this is good. Like, you know, I don't want to drink at work. Like, they'll know, you know, and maybe I'll get some discount. This could be good. The truck had broken down already, so I'm bumming rides to this job at the liquor store. And I hear one of my roommates talking about when his truck broke down, he would hitchhike to work up the mountain. He's like, well, it's legal in Colorado. You know, he's like, you got an apron on, you're going to work, they'll pick you up. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. So, like, now I'm hitchhiking to work at the liquor store in the winter in Colorado. And I thought I knew what loneliness was before. This is brutal. I mean, I'd be standing on the side of the road, like, flat broke with, like, three cigarettes, saying, like, I hate my life, what happened to me? And, like, my arm is out, and I'm, like, shaking, watching these cars go by. Like, talk about, like, awkward conversations. Like, when people pick me up, like, I know I'm a fraud on the inside. I'm hoping you just phoned out. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm just waiting for the truck to get fixed. I'm just going to work, you know. But inside, it's like, I hate my life. What happened to me? I don't want to drink today. I had tried to stop drinking a couple other times on my own, and it never worked out. And this time, like, I think I had just given up. Like, my life was becoming a living hell. I just wanted to get drunk after work. I mean, that was where I was at, honestly. And I remember, like, hating the people at this liquor store. There was like two kinds of people that would go there. It would be like, you know, somebody comes in, they buy like four cases of wine, they pay with the black card, and you know, they leave in the Mercedes. And then like, you know, homeboy would roll in like the 90s minivan. He'd get like two 40s and like five shooters and pay with a 20. But he'd come back 3 hours later and get half that amount and pay with like a five. And then right before I close, he'd come in and drop a bag of change on the counter. And like, I remember, like, getting drunk and, like, making fun of this guy, but, like, it slowly dawned on me that, like, I'm doing the same thing on my days off, you know, and then I crossed that line, too, that I said I'm not going to do it. Like, I would have passed the lie detector test when I said I don't want to drink on the job. Like, I didn't want to not have money to drink, and I didn't want to be homeless, so therefore I did not want to drink on the job. But it happened. You know, I'll just have a couple. It'll take away the hangover. Like, I'll get away with it, and I knew there was no cameras in the beer cooler, so I find, like, fireball shooters stacked to the ceiling. Wow. And I'm in the beer cooler, shooting whiskey, peeking out between the bottles to see if anybody's coming in. And I mean, it was terrible. You know, I remember like looking out the window, like, how am I going to get home? Am I going to get a ride? Am I going to hitchhike? Is somebody going to pick me up tonight? You know, some nights I'm walking like 2 miles down the road when it's snowing and like really weird people pick me up at midnight. And I remember seeing an ad in the paper, like, you know, they're looking for help, you know, but like, there's three people that work there. There's the manager, the guy that's been there forever that they trust, and me. But like, I'm fine, right? Like, they don't know. And like one day I'm drunk. I'm really drunk on the job, and I'm mopping, and I back into like this wine display, and like red bottles explode all over the white tile. It's on camera. And I'm like hammered. Like, I clean it up as best as I can, and I go home, and I convince myself everything is okay. And I remember just like waking up with like this terror, you know, like it talks about like the four horsemen, terror, bewilderment. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, so the next couple of days, it's like, am I going to get fired today? Am I going to train my replacement first? And then like when I get drunk at night, I convince myself it's going to be okay again. And like, this is horrible. Finally, like I wake up one morning. And I tagged this bottle like Smirnoff that I stole. It's at like 5:45 in the morning. The sun's about to come up. And I'm standing on the porch smoking a cigarette. And I'm just standing there. Like, the big book talks about it. It's like the jumping off place. I can no longer see my life drinking. I can no longer see my life without drinking. I will know loneliness such as few do. And I will wish for the end. And I remember thinking to myself, like, please help me. I don't know what to do. And, like, I was so broken. I didn't know I was asking for help, and I didn't know that anyone was listening. You know, I look back on it, and I had this thought to, like, call the lady from the t-shirt shop. It was, like, this really religious, like, I thought she was kind of nuts at the time, like, nice lady, you know, does things for people. She, like, spot me money sometimes or give me rides, and I called her, and for some reason, like, I told this woman the truth. I can't stop drinking. I'm stealing on the job. I'm drinking on the job. I don't know what to do. You know, I'd kind of been talking to my folks about maybe moving back east. They sounded like they didn't want any part of that, and talking to her made it real, you know. And then finally I talked to my parents and I told them I think I had some kind of problem. And, you know, my mom eventually said that if I really wanted to try to get help, that I could move back and she would help me out. And I quit the liquor store. My buddy took me into another liquor store and I started drinking right away because I was shaking to pieces. And my mom said, pack up your stuff and send it home. You know, we'll send you home. She's like, if you bring your old drama home, you're going to be on your own. You're going to be homeless, but we'll give you a shot. So I packed up all my, like, worldly belongings in, like, 6 boxes, and I sent them home. And, like, that was the scariest week ever. I was drinking, but, like, it wasn't working. You know, I didn't know it was going to happen. And I woke up, and I drank everything in the house. I drank all the beer in the fridge. I drank, you know, we had dozens of, like, cans on the counters, and, like, they were flat, and they were warm, and they were 3 days old, and I went through every single one. I drank everything I could find, and my roommate took me to the airport. I made him stop at Liquor World on the way to the Durango airport, and I got another bottle of Fireball that I sipped in the car, and I left. You know, my buddy's mom, she had known me since I was little. She, like, gave me this card, and I remember opening it that morning. It said, like, don't forget about us, you know, and there was, like, a $20 bill in there. Like, I thought that was so cool because I was flat broke. I had 2 cigarettes. I had nothing. And I got to, like, Dallas-Fort Worth, and, like, the weirdest thing happened. Like, I had 20 bucks, no effective mental defense against the first drink, but I didn't drink. I mean, I remember thinking, like, I ain't paying $7 for, like, a 16-ounce Coors Light. That ain't going to do it, you know? I bought a pack of smokes, and I got, like, a sandwich, and I flew back to Philly. I was shaking to pieces, the cold sweats and shaking. All that was crazy. They told me later I should have went to the hospital because I can die from that. I got home. The next day, I really hung around my family tight. I didn't know what I was going to do, man. The next day, my dad took me shopping with him before Thanksgiving. He took me to the beer distributor. He took me to the liquor store. I was like, what is this guy doing? On Thanksgiving, everybody drank in front of me, and I felt some type of way about that. And Friday night, one of my buddies that I used to drink with, he hadn't been drinking for like 6 years on his own willpower. And for some reason, he decided to take me to an AA meeting. And they called it the trailer. You know, it was this big book meeting in a portable. And the guy who was chairing the meeting is kind of young. He had a beard. And like, there was something about him. You know, he says, like, hey, man, Newtown A is the best show in town, man. Buck for the basket. And like, I appreciated his sarcasms. I didn't know what I was doing there. But that guy talked about what happened to him when he drank. He talked about how he couldn't control it. He talked about how he let down everybody who cared about him, how he was homeless, how he got arrested, you know, how he felt. And I remember thinking, like, that guy might understand how I felt, you know. They gave me a phone list. They gave me a big book. I admit that I started reading the big book. I didn't call anybody. I started with the stories in the back because I didn't understand that front part. But the stories tripped me out. I could relate to all of them. You know, the drinking and the disaster, and I didn't understand the middle part, but, like, I hoped that I had a good ending. And I remember that Monday night I went back to this other meeting, and my thought was, I'm going to go to AA so these people can help me figure out how to get into rehab, because that's going to fix me. And I go, and I listen, and I don't talk to anybody. I was scared, and I'm standing in front of this church, and I'm, like, chain smoking, and I'm like, man, I got to talk to somebody, man. This is it, you know. And people would walk by, and I'd just be like, over and over, and I'm like, oh my god. Like, I remember, like, I have this booming thought in my head. It's like, the next person that comes out of that door, you were going to ask him about rehab. And the door opens, and, like, it's that guy that's chairing the meeting. I'm like, hey man, can I ask you something about rehab? He's like, what do you want to know about rehab? I've been to like 7. And it blows me away to this day, because what, like, this guy that I met in the parking lot did right there is he worked the 12th step, like it is in the big book. You know, he told me what happened to him. You know, he asked me things about myself. And he asked me if I wanted to go get something to eat with them and some guys at Applebee's. And I said, I don't really have any money. He's like, I didn't ask you if you had any money. I asked you if you wanted to go get something to eat. It's my treat. And for some reason, I went. And I talked to this guy. And I hear people talking about, like, getting a sponsor, and, like, I guess it sounds important because a lot of people that seem like they've been sober for a long time are doing this thing. So, like, I asked him if he, like, sponsors people. You know, for some reason, I asked him if he would do it, and he's like, all right, you know, when I asked my sponsor to sponsor me, he gave me some suggestions, and he asked me if I would take them. How are you with the God thing? I'm like, yeah. He's like, so why don't you, like, pray in the morning and ask him to help give you sober and thank him at night? Like, I think you should probably go to a meeting every day. It's like, I want you to talk to another alcoholic every day. So for a long time, I want you to call me every day. Don't text me. Call me. Are you single? Good. Stay away from women for a year and don't break the law. Are you willing to do these things? I said, yeah. He's like, why don't you come to this church tomorrow? I'm making coffee and we'll talk. You know, so that's how I got my sponsor. That's how it started. And I come meet this guy on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. I make the coffee, set up the chairs. We'll go sit in this little back room with, like, the little kid chairs, and we'd read the big book. And I kind of didn't really get it at first, but for some reason, like, I trusted this guy. You know, we start going through the steps, and I remember taking the third step with this guy, and, like, you know, we just read it together, and he's like, I want you to start saying this every morning. He's like, and stuff's going to happen. And I believed him. And I remember, you know, I start writing my fourth step, and I go to sleep one night, and I just dream. I'm in Florida again. I'm in these weird motels again, and I see these people from my past and my present, and I don't know where I'm at, and I'm drinking, and I'm drunk, and I'm blacking out, and I'm drinking, and it goes, like, day after day, and, like, I thought it was real. I was terrified. I was like, aren't I sober in AA? How did I get started again? You know, I was so scared, and then, like, this scene cut. And, like, everybody's sitting on the bed, like, after a real, real good party at the Motel 6, and they're, like, looking up at me, and they're like, congratulations, Paul, the nightmare is over. And then, like, I'm walking out to the car in the dark in this parking lot with some lady in this dream, and, like, I can't see her face. It has, like, this real trippy feel to it, and she says, she's like, I completely understand because the same thing happened to me. And when I woke up, I was like, what just happened? It was like the scariest moment of my life. Like, it felt like somebody was in the room. I felt like this physical tingling sensation. I was scared shitless, to be honest. I didn't know what happened. And, like, something happened, though, because, like, all of a sudden, like, stuff starts, like, clicking into place. It's like, I thought, like, some of the people in AA are talking about this crazy stuff. Like, they sound like they escaped from somewhere. And other people are saying, just don't drink and go to meetings. And, like, something clicked. It's like, in that dream, like, I didn't see how I picked up again. And then I'm like, oh, my God. I understand later. It hits me all at once that I understand step one. And I concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. This isn't just, like, if I start, I can't stop. This is, like, I can't stop starting. And there's nothing I can do about it. So this is way worse than I thought. And I was terrified. I called my sponsor. I sound like a raving lunatic. He's like, man, he's like, I don't know what you're going through, but, like, I believe you. And you probably want to hang on to this because this is, like, better than anything you've got going on. And I became willing at that point to do whatever it took. You know, I have these ideas in my mind. Like, I'm not going to write this stuff on my fourth step. I don't want to talk about that. But what I'm thinking of, I'm reading in the big book, look, if I don't do this, invariably they got drunk. I don't want to get drunk. I don't want to die. So I write it, you know, and I take these steps. And I'm grateful to my sponsor, my fifth step. He pointed out things that were selfish. It hurt at the time. He gave me a different colored pen than the one I had used for the stuff I couldn't see. And thank God for that. You know, the hour after that was the quietest hour of my life. I went home and I lit a fire and I read what he said to read. And I sat there, I stared at the flames. And I called him back and I told him one more thing. And I felt like this might work. I went to a speaker meeting, much like this one, that I didn't want to go to. And when the lady turned around to speak, it was someone I knew. It was someone I didn't know was sober. Someone I used to drink with. And she was tough. This tough Philly chick. And she told her story. And I remember thinking, like, God, maybe this can work for me too. You know, and I just did what they said. I took the suggestions. You know, I went from, like, chair setter-upper to coffee maker to... you know, I'm an alternate GSR, now I'm a GSR, and I got two church keys. You know, I just put one foot in front of the other. I did what they said, and I just kept showing up. You know, I listened, I took suggestions, I went through the steps. And, like, for a while, it was tough. Like, I didn't understand the restless, irritable discontent and the noise in my mind was all part of my alcoholism. It was hard some days. It was brutal. The obsession came for me in early sobriety, and that was brutal. I remember on Valentine's Day looking on social media, like, how do these people, really? Like, she's complaining about these flowers? Are you kidding me? Why don't you try recovering from alcoholism, really? You know, really? Oh, I love M&M's. Oh, I want to get drunk. And it just came like that. And I was horrified. I was sitting there with the coins in my hand, crying, calling my sponsor. Like, where did this come from? I go to a meeting. It kept coming back all day. All day. I was scared for my life. Like, I ended up, like, I ran out of people to call. I, like, crawled into, like, the pillow fort in my bed. I pulled the blankets over my head, and I was crying. I was begging God to keep me sober. People say sometimes there's going to be nothing between you and a drink but God. And I'm like, please, please don't let me drink. And the last thought I remember having is like, well, you can't get drunk if you're asleep. So I took a nap, and I made it to a meeting. And I just kept going, you know. I ended up looking for jobs. Like, I'm a Temple kid. I'm smarter now. I don't want to work in a restaurant. I can get a good job. Like, no. You know, I tried and I tried and I tried. And I remember just feeling crazy talking to my sponsor. I was like, man, I give up, man. I was like, maybe I'll just try to get my old job waiting tables back before I left. Instead of saying, I told you so, he said, well, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't you give him a call today? I bet you something good will come of that. So I start waiting tables again. And I kind of don't know what I'm doing there. I'm like, you know what, man, I got to get a car again. I'll work lunch shifts. I'll go to meetings at night. Sobriety is my priority. I heard people say if you put God in AA first, everything else in your life will be first class. I didn't have any better ideas, so I just did it. And I was working. I was saving money. And I remember thinking to myself so many times, why am I here? And then I started seeing things. You know, like I get the table with the guy whose like face is all messed up, some kind of horrible accident, and the women at the table look like they're horrified to be there, and he's busting my balls, and it's so awkward, I can feel it. And I remember like praying in the bathroom, I was resentful, you know, and I'm like, what am I doing here, you know? And then like this guy, like he goes to pay, and he looks up at me, and he's like, this is the first time that we've been out since the accident. He's like, thank you so much, why don't you keep it? Like $100 bill in there. I was like, how does this stuff happen? You know, like I get like the blind couple on a date, you know, and I'm serving their salad and I'm like, oh my God, they're blind. I was like, do you like peppers? You know, I'm like, you know, like they hand me like cash and credit card and I'm like just looking up, you know. Wow, what happened to me? Sometime, or I don't really remember like my spiritual awakening. I mean, I know that at some point the obsession to drink went away. It was just gone. And at the same time, I realized, like, this stuff I'm doing every day is pretty serious. I'm looking for the same things every day. Resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid. I'm taking my own inventory. I realized that my mind lies to me all the time, and it always did. That's why I'm doing this stuff. You know, like, I don't go to the to bakery to get my car fixed. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous from my drinking. And I woke up free today. You know, the kind of life I live today, like, my sister had another kid. And she wanted me to be there. I got to hold a newborn, you know, like at the restaurant. I found out I'm working with all these people in recovery. What am I doing here, right? I'm working with all these people in recovery. You know, like I get this crush on the boss and like you're not allowed to date the manager. And like I'm praying on it for like a year. And like I realize I'm like just in fear. I talk to my sponsor. I'm like, what do I do? He's like, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to find out. He's like, do whatever you got to do today, but don't drink and call me tonight. So I asked my boss's boss what I can do, and like she's like, you can, but you have to transfer. And like I feel like I'm gonna throw up all day. And like I asked this lady out to dinner, and I told her how I felt. She didn't bite, but we had this long conversation about my future, you know. And I remember saying, well, if I go to the other restaurant, it's like should have got off the pot, man. I'm gonna try to go for management, or I'm gonna get out and do something else. She's like, well, if you want to move up, why don't you talk to the boss here? She likes you. She knows about your cooking experience. You know, you see what you can do. So, like, not only did I not drink, but the next day I talked to my boss, like, well, what can I do if I want to move up in this company? She's like, well, you know, if you want to move up in this company, she's like, I know you how to cook. Why don't you go back into the kitchen and learn it, and then I'll teach you how to run it. We'll get you ready to try to get you promoted and get you out of here if that's what you want to do. So I say, okay. You know, I tell you every time I'm cooking again, I say I'm never doing that again. You know, so now here I am cooking again. Sauteing sober, you know, making pizza, and I finally get that promotion, man. This lady promotes me to culinary professional. She gives me keys, a card, position of trust. She gives me a pair of chef's whites, and I start tearing up in the office. She's like, don't cry. Like, you know, I work with people that I really like. It's a cool job. I live the kind of life today that I'm okay with. Like, I have real friends. You know, I have like a higher power that I can rely on. I need one that I could take to work. You know, I got real friends. You know, my family likes me being around. You know, my parents are out of town this weekend. My parents used to go out of town. They take the car keys. They take the money. They leave a little thing like feed the fish with the boxes. You know, my mom, she's like, my car key's there if you need it. Just lock up. Have a good week. You know, it's, I got more than I ever could have bargained for coming to AA. And things like this should not have happened to a drunk like me. That's all I got.